Welcome to the Ministry of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. We trust that the upcoming message will inspire, encourage, and motivate you to apply what you learn at home, at work, and in your ministry. At the end of the message, you'll find information on how to contact Living on the Edge or obtain additional resources. Now, here's Chip.
We're in a series called House or Home. We're talking about the key eight ingredients that make for a close-knit family. And I have to let you know, right on this message, you probably can't read it from where you're at, but there's a warning label. There really is. And so I've got to put this warning label up. You know when you get some prescriptions and it says a little warning, or on some of those things you can buy out of the machines, has a little warning. This says warning. Contents may be dangerous in this message. This message you're about to hear may be hazardous to your emotional equilibrium. It may call into question assumptions and preconceived ideas you have about womanhood, about marriage, and about motherhood. Though ancient in its origin, these words have been tested successfully for centuries, but they may sound strange, countercultural, or literally bizarre to 21st century men and women. The implications of this message on your life and family could be drastic, this is a warning, and disturbing. If applied en masse by those who claim allegiance to Jesus Christ, the application of this message could be revolutionary. So with that, why don't you pull out some notes, if you would. They're in your bulletin. Let's dig in together. And let's talk about what's a woman to do. Ingredient number one we know in a marriage that lasts and kids that have a great environment to grow up is the marriage covenant. Then we learn the husband has a role to step up and love and a wife to step in and support. A husband's responsibility is provide, protect, and nurture. And a wife's responsibilities is what we want to talk about today. And we're going to learn that it's to nurture, protect, and provide. The husband will have a scope for his, and we'll learn the wife has a different focus and scope for hers. Last week when we talked about a man's responsibilities, we said the average guy, most of us in this room, what we were asking for is, you know, what's the box top look like? What's it mean to be a man? What specifically are you supposed to do? Many of us are first-generation Christians. Many of us didn't have dads who anyone showed them, and they didn't show us. What I'd suggest when we ask the question, what's a woman to do? The question is not, where's the box top? The question is, which box top should we choose? Women have been told over the centuries, and especially in the last 40 or 50 years, lots of different pictures about this is what it means to be a woman. This is what you ought to do. So I brought five box tops, okay? And these are jigsaw puzzles. This is how different people over the centuries at times, and especially the last few decades, have told a woman, this is what you ought to do. Historically, way back when, these are seashells reminding us of the Creator. Many women grew up in ages past and thought the best, highest, holiest thing you could do was devote your life to the Creator. You don't need a man because God is so good, very acceptable. And you would join a monastery and spend your life worshiping and serving God. That's one kind of extreme, if you will. But that's what a woman could do. On the other extreme, we have these birds. Take it by faith, they're all female birds. And these female birds are up in a tree talking to one another, and they're saying, we don't need men. They're evil. They've ruined society. This is the Gloria Steinem box. And this is the box on the other end that has infiltrated women's lives and saying, you know what? All of our problems are because of men. Now, over on this side, we have a Norman Rockwell picture. And this box gives us the picture of kind of a, not necessarily biblical, but a traditional view of family, where women's roles are very limited, very defined. This is what you do, and if you're doing it wrong, your husband will let you know. Moving on along this side, you see this basically is a kind of an interesting menagerie of a very complex highway. And what this is my Murphy Brown box. And what Murphy Brown wants you to know is, ladies, you really do need a man, but you need to have him on your terms. Kids are fine if you can have him on your terms. You don't need to necessarily marry him. You can have your career. Have the man when you want him, how you want him, and the kid when you want him, how you want him. Murphy Brown, 80s, early 90s. Then finally, I have the middle box, and this is a box you can't see, but it has pictures of different places around the world, passports, money. And this is what I call the modern mom. And the average modern mom, whether she be Christian or non-Christian, has had all these different concepts bleeded into the culture. And so there's parts of the culture that tell her you don't need men at all, and there's parts that say you need to be way over there. And the modern mom is, I think, represented by the number two. And she hasn't really made up her mind, and she's not really sure which box she really should follow. What is the picture about what a woman should do? And so she ends up sort of gravitating into it. And so she ends up with the number two because she has two roles. She ends up with a role toward her husband and family, and she ends up with a role toward her work. She has a role then toward people inside the church and outside the church. Then she has two jobs. The one major thing of women liberation that happened is instead of getting liberated, actually in many ways they got a lot more added to their plate. And so they are full-time at home. I mean, with few rare exceptions and some men, hopefully, that are really helping out, the average woman who works also has a full-time job at home with kids and husband and all the rest. And so she has two roles, two jobs. And then over time, we've learned that you really can't manage much more than about two kids. So you got two roles, two jobs, two kids, or actually 2.3. I don't know where the 0.3 goes. And really, the woman on our day, you know how she really lives? The final two is with too much. It's just too much. And she's overwhelmed, and she's tired, and there's expectations that no three people could fulfill. And she feels pulled at this end, and then she'll feel pulled at this end. And she basically just makes it up as she goes along and does the best she can. And says, what's a woman to do? In week number three, ladies, we talked about the role of a woman, the what you are to be. And that had to do with stepping in and supporting. Now I want to talk about the responsibility of a woman. What are you to do? And you notice the top three priorities from Ephesians chapter 5, 21 to 33 by way of application are nurture, protection, and provision. And by nurture, I mean to create a relational environment that promotes the spiritual, emotional, and physical welfare of those around you. And we all know, and no one would deny, no one does that better than a woman. A woman, by nature and by design, provides nurture to every relationship she enters. Second is protection, and that's to minimize the harmful influences and effects upon the lives she has been entrusted to nurture. And no, everybody knows the story, even in the animal kingdom, is that you get around a mother bear when you are messing with her bear cubs, and you're in big trouble. It is instinctive that a woman will protect those that she nurtures. And third is provision. This is to maximize all the available spiritual, emotional, and physical resources and relationships to do good, to want to bless those in your relational network. Now, what we're going to see is that these are the same words, interestingly, used for a man, because really, in the home, you're a team. But now what I want to show you is the scope of a man. Remember, it was provision financially. It was protection spiritually and physically. It was nurture. But this is the final priority where we have it reversed and where a woman's primary role. The scope here is exterior and interior, but in that order. And the scope now changes to the interior relationships in the home first and then provision last. Three classic passages tell us where the focus of a woman's nurture, protection, and provision lie. Follow along as I read Proverbs 31, 10 to 12, and listen for those concepts of nurture and protection and provision. An excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he has no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Notice the focus. The heart of her husband. She does him good. She protects him from evil. 1 Timothy 5:14, the context Paul is writing to young widows in the church. And he says, so I would prefer that the younger widows get married, have children, and take care of their homes so as to give the enemies no chance of speaking evil of us. In the early church, if a man died, a woman was left alone. She had two options, remarry, or if the church would help out financially, or the only other way to make a living was to go into prostitution. And so Paul's giving instructions about which women should go kind of on the official church list. And he says of the younger women, much better that they marry and have a family. Third passage is Titus 2, 3 to 5. Notice there's admonition both to older and younger women. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine. Those are three negatives. Positive, teaching what is good, that they may encourage the younger women. What are they supposed to teach younger women? Where's the focus? To love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands. Why? That the word of God may not be dishonored. The scripture overwhelmingly says there's many things a woman can do, but the scope of her nurturing activity, the focus of her provision and protection, is first geared toward and inside the home, the relationship with her husband and with her children. The reason for this, did you notice the very last line? Is that if the home is not a place where the love of Christ is shining, where relationships are different, where there's genuine intimacy and authenticity and vulnerability, when neighbors aren't stepping back and saying, wow, so that's how a Christian marriage works, and wow, what in the world? Is there something in your water that we don't have? How do kids turn out like that? The Apostle Paul is saying that at the heart, we'll look at some of these key words, at the heart, at the vortex of a marriage and a home being what God wants it to be, the energy and focus and gift that it takes is the primary responsibility and privilege of the woman. And it's her ability and skills that make that happen. Turn the page with me, if you will. Let's ask and answer then the question, how do you step up and support to lead your family in righteousness? Okay, I'm an honest woman. I really love God. I know Christ is my Savior. And you know, when I do some thinking, I realize that, you know, each one of these box tops, these pictures of what a woman ought to do, are floating in my mind somewhere. What's God want me to do? What's the scripture teach? And ladies, listen real carefully, because, you know, we'll talk about the role of working and not working and when and why and what if you're a single mom and what if you can't live on one income. And, you know, just kind of put that off to the side and ask God to give you ears to hear. And men, ask God to give you ears to hear, because what we're going to say may have huge implications on your family. But here's what I want you to listen to. I don't know how old your kids are, but if they're 2 or 3 or 4, add 20 years. If they're 6 or 7, add 15 years. If they're 10, add 12 to 14 years. And I want you to imagine what your life is going to be like 10, 15, or 20 years from now, and how that will shape the next 40 or 50 that you have once they leave the home and when they come back. And 15 or 20 years from now, what kind of marriage do you want to have? And 15 or 20 years from now, what kind of intimacy and what kind of joy and what kind of intactness? And how do you want to see your kids grow up? What kind of values do you want them to have? And what you're going to find is that God is going to provide an amazing plan that's been tested that allows for the best and the highest. We sang that song, He is good, He is good. But I got to tell you, the plan has been abandoned. The divorce and the fallout and the pain that we see in families is the fruit of it. And the journey to do it God's way for many of you will be a disturbing, painful, difficult road where you will have to do some of the biggest gut checks of your life. And you'll have to say, do I really believe what God says? And you have to say, in the culture that we live in, is there any way to do it this way, and what's the price? And I just say that to prepare you. And I say that because you need the long view. Three top priorities then. Number one, a wife's first priority is to support, affirm, and empower her husband to fulfill his God-given calling both within and outside the home. It's the number one priority. It may even sound strange to our ears. You mean the number one priority of a person is actually another person? Yes. Just as the number one priority of a man is to so sacrificially lead that you would lay down your life physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and even die for your wife. It's pretty radical, too. Genesis 2:18, when God speaks of the creation, he talks about creating the woman as a suitable helper or helpmate. And we don't like those words, and I know there's bad connotations. The Hebrew word, however, means primarily a corresponding part. There's no inferiority. There's no demeaning. It's the idea that God created Adam, and then he created a corresponding part like a jigsaw puzzle. And as they both come together, it is in that coming together, distinctly designed, that a marriage and a relationship and intimacy and all the stuff that we're longing for, we really want. And God says, this is the design for the woman, and she is the most powerful, strategic, influential role in any home. Take it to the bank. The person that is most defining and most influential in any home and how the relationships really pan out. The man has a strategic role, setting direction, modeling things, loving his wife, caring for his kids. But day to day, the glue of any family, by and large, is the woman. She's the champion. I don't like that suitable helpmate because it's got too much 21st century baggage. It's a good concept, but the idea I like is a champion, a teammate, a best friend. It's the idea that every organization, every person knows that no one makes it on their own. Remember the Beth Midler song? You know, they sing it at funerals and, you know, sometimes at graduations. Remember that one line in it? You are the wind beneath my wings. I'm telling you, there's not a person in this room that's done anything great, anything of importance, or anything of impact that you can't turn around and say, there was a champion in your life. They championed the cause. They championed the values. They championed you. They loved you. They were the wind beneath your wings. And what you know in your heart, man, your success, it wasn't about you. It was about them. And God says a woman's role in her husband's life is to be the wind beneath his wings. And she will find actually her greatest fulfillment. I came across something that was just so outrageous. It's a book called Father Courage. I don't recommend you buy it. It's called What Happens When Men Put Family First. It's not doing well because it was purchased for a dollar. And I don't mean this as critically as it sounds, but I mean on the back, Gloria Steinem is recommending the book. This is a book about what a man ought to do in a family by a radical feminist. But now listen carefully, because what they've understood is there has to be a role for a man, and the whole book is about what happens when a man steps up in the family. Listen, ladies, to the words of a radical feminist who's stepping back and has watched things played out for 30 years. Here's her advice to women. What I would say to wives is, what advice I would give myself is, let it go. It's the refrain that keeps circling. First of all, let go of the resentment that fuels the who is more oppressed sweepstakes. Let go of the need to control everything that pertains to home and kids. And at the same time, let go of the sense of failure for what doesn't work and wouldn't necessarily have worked anyway, even if you had been in control. Let go of that legalistic sense of what is fair and go for something that feels like teamwork. Let go of a precise checklist of preconceptions of what a good father and husband is, and wait and see how experience defines those roles in your relationship. Did you ever believe you would hear a radical feminist basically saying, it's about being teammates, and learn how those roles will play out? Well, what's it look like to put your husband in a position where you support, affirm, and empower him to do what God designed him to do, you to do, and how it impacts your children? Let me give you five ways I think this works out practically. Number one is make time with God your number one priority. The next statement I'm going to say, I believe with all my heart. I'd say this to George Bush right in the eye. The most spiritually, emotionally, and physically demanding job on the earth is running and managing a home that creates an environment of transformational love. Bar none. George has a tough job, as does every other president. Running and managing a home in such a way that you create an environment of transformational love in your relationship with your husband and with your children is the hardest, most difficult, most demanding job on the planet. And that's why women have some gifts that men don't have. That's why when we do research, you can think out of the right side of your brain and the left side of your brain. That's why you can do analysis over here and be intuitive over here, and we can't. That's why you can multitask 5 times better than the average man. You need more equipment to get the calling and the job done that you have. But even with that said, application, you must draw on supernatural resources to fulfill the nearly impossible demands to be the kind of wife and mother that the Scripture calls you to. And all I'm saying is this. Ladies, you can't impart what you don't possess. I've watched my wife get up very early every morning since we've been married to meet with God first, so she has what she needs from God to give to me and to our children, to our neighbors, and to the calling God gives her in ministry. Make time with God your number one priority. Life will be nothing but confusion and difficulty unless you get right and get filled with God's Spirit and His grace. Second is pray for your husband regularly. A woman's power and influence in the home often is as much informal as it is formal. It's often indirect as opposed to being direct. And you need to understand, when you think about looking at all those things about your husband that make you absolutely nuts, and we have many things that we bring to the table, is that God is your number one ally. He's not given you some difficult job and said, "Good luck, lady, I couldn't do much with him either." Proverbs 21:1 says, "The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it whatever way he wishes." Pray for your husband. I asked my wife, I walked through this with her yesterday, and I said, "Honey, I mean, shoot it straight." She said, "Oh, Chip, you can't imagine. You've had attitudes, things needed to be, fixed around the house. I thought you needed to step in with one of our kids. There are so many things that we've never talked about. I've prayed. And then all of a sudden you read a book or some guy tells you this or something happens and you come back and say, "Hey, I'm going to do this." And I don't say a word. God and I have been on that one for months together. And ladies, my wife told me, she says, "Chip, I pray every day God will give you wisdom. I pray every day God will give you a thirst for himself. I pray every day he'll make you a humble man of God. I pray God will use you. I pray God will make you sensitive." The most powerful force on the face of the earth is the intercessory prayer, I believe, of a wife for her husband. Third, plan for your husband daily. And maybe this is like too simple, but I just don't see it happening. See, lots of marriages and lots of things going lots of different directions. Life doesn't just happen. The demands on a woman's time and energy are overwhelming, spontaneous, and unrelenting. Is this true or not, ladies? I mean, the kids don't say, "Mommy, I'm going to cry in about a half hour. Get mentally prepared." Right in the middle of a big thing, you get a phone call from someone and they're weeping on the other end of the phone. I don't know, a lot of women say, "Really, I've already set the schedule, sorry." The demands are unbelievable on a woman. Application then: planned attention, love, communication, and nurture of your marriage is essential. Planning. Came across a book. There's parts of it that's a little bit over the top. I put the title in your notes, but Elizabeth George, A Woman After God's Own Heart. But the best section I read in this was her idea of planning. She literally gets up and plans to do a special deed for her husband every day of kindness. She looks at the week and she plans in, when are we going to have a special dinner? She plans in meals and time together alone when she looks at the kids' schedule. And then something I thought that was great in here. She said, "We plan to put our kids to bed early." When your kids are young, the temptation is to let them stay up. And the average couple then, at a time when they need time with each other the most, they don't get any. Let them whine, let them cry. It'll take a couple weeks for them to get in the pattern. Put them to bed early so every day there's a window of time where your husband gets your attention and you get his attention. And ladies, this is hard to hear, and men, we don't usually say much about this, but I'll just touch on it. One of the hardest times in a man's life is the birth of your first child. The first 3 or 4 weeks is awesome. You know, look at this. It's a part of me. It's a part of you. What do you think? Oh, wow. You're overwhelmed. Like 3 weeks into it, like your wife has not slept at all, but here's her whole world.
What do you think, honey?
And you go to work and, you know, you're tired too, and then pretty soon, okay, we've had this euphoria. And you don't want to say this because it sounds so callous, but you start driving to work thinking, like, when did anyone give me a little attention? So when did I get demoted to be number two? And you know, you don't know who to say this to or where or why, and then you get angry about it. And then you start feeling sorry for yourself, but you can't feel sorry for yourself because how do you compete with, you know, the kid's 21 inches old, you know, 9.3 pounds. Come on, kid, you know, you can't do that. And so you know what happens? Often early, because time isn't planned, what you find is men then look for strokes at work and women unconsciously move toward finding their fulfillment with their kids. Add 5 years, add 10 years, add 15 years, and you have a woman whose real heart and passion and idol is her children, a man whose heart and passion is at work. And that's why the second most regular time for divorce is as soon as all the kids are gone. You got to plan time to be together. Third thing is prepare for your husband daily. And I know I'm messing around here, ladies, but, you know, track with me. Here's a fact. What a woman does to initially attract a man is often lost in the shuffle of work, kids, supper, and fatigue. Do you remember like when you were trying to catch him? Remember how you dressed? Remember if you invited him over or something? What you did, you know? And, you know, the house, you know, you didn't say, oh, the tornado hit a house yesterday. Sorry about that, you know? Got curlers in my hair, old sweatshirt, no makeup, but I know you love me. Is that how you did it? And you know what happens over time? You get pushed, your schedule gets pushed, there's the kids here, there's work here, there's this here, and your husband often going into a situation where everyone's getting all real dressed up every day to look pretty, comes home to a wife who's not prepared the home, has not prepared herself, has not prepared her appearance, has not prepared the environment. You know what it's like to come home when all those things aren't prepared? And she's on the phone with someone else, and the kids are running around. It doesn't take a man long to start looking elsewhere. That's when that remote comes on and SportsCenter pops up or the paper gets popped open. Prepare yourself. Ask yourself the question, how do I mentally, emotionally, and physically prepare for relational connection, communication, and romance with my husband? Now, I this is embarrassing, but I got to tell you, for the last 23, 24 years, and not perfectly, and my wife doesn't have it all together, but this is an area, I mean, when I come home, you know, it's not like everything's spick and span, but it's always picked up. My wife knows when I'm going to be home, and I can tell. She's either gotten a shower, she's got fresh makeup on, she looks really nice. When I come home, she stops what she's doing, she greets me. When the kids were small, she would gather them, let them say hi, da-da-da-da-da, and then she said, okay, here's a little activity. And she and I were going to connect for the first 10 or 15 minutes. If she was on the phone, she said, you know what? I'll be right back with you. She created an environment where I came home that was positive, where she communicated I mattered. And you know what? She looked good when I married her, and she still looks good. Because she wanted to communicate that our relationship is important. It's made a huge difference. Finally, number 5 is protect your time with your husband. You might put a little star underneath this one, ladies, and you might even write down, my husband is the number one human relationship on this planet for me. I'll go slower. My husband is the number one human relationship on this planet for me. It's not my mom, if you're young. It's not my best friend. It's not one of our children. It's not anybody or anything else. Just as you are the most important human being on the face of the earth to him, to which he's called to sacrifice and lay down his life for, he is the most important relationship for you. And a man has to guard, as I said, his work, and you need to make sure, don't let it be the kids. If you allow your kids subtly to become number one in your life, you will destroy your marriage. And it happens a lot of different ways. I was thinking of How many wives can never say no to their kids? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And hey, no, your father and I are talking right now. And you know, I know some people, and this was really hard for my wife. When I talked this over, oh, don't say that, Chip. It's so hard for us women. And I said, I'm going to say it anyway. I mean, once your child gets old enough, you need to be able to go on a date. You need to be able to get away for a couple days where you feel like as the husband, like, hey, I got the number one spot back for a while. And you know, the first night you go away, you don't get it back. You just kind of go through the reentry. And then the middle of the second day, it's like, hey, this is why we got married, right? Third day, you think, man, this feels a lot like my honeymoon. You know how many women have never gone a weekend away with their husband? I can't leave the kids. I can't leave the kids. I just can't leave them. I mean, you know, I know it's my mom and there's the Coast Guard and security guards and James Bond guarding them, but I just can't leave them. To which the husband says, she's 16 years old. She's going to be okay. And I'm playing with you, but I want you to hear. You have got to let go and trust and protect your time. You know, we look at our kids' schedule, and my wife plans out the calendar, and when they're all gone different directions, and the evening is home alone, we don't just guess what we're going to do that night. We plan, how are we going to get good time together? What do we need to talk about? How do you plan romantic evenings for one another? And ladies, I got news for you. You don't need to hear this, but he's probably not going to plan it out. He's probably not even thinking. He's not very good at multitasking. Work, work, work. Okay, I'm supposed to love my wife.
I meet with the guys this morning. Hey, guys, how you doing?
If you don't plan it, it won't happen. The number one priority of a woman, as radical as it sounds, will be so rich and good for her and then for the children, is to support, affirm, and empower your husband to fulfill his God-given calling, both outside and inside the home. Second priority, akin to it. A wife's second priority is to create an environment in the home that nurtures and develops her children to fulfill God's will for their lives. It's an amazing gift mix to be able to create an environment that when kids grow up in this environment, they reach their full potential, they understand who God is, they have a model of what a good marriage is, and they have this self-confidence that comes from being loved and accepted just for who they are, and then they embrace that and they do God's will. The second priority is to create that environment. The phrase here in 1 Timothy 5:14 where it says, he's speaking to these widows and he says, take care of your homes. Very interesting word. Very strong word. The word take care of there has the idea of manage, rule. For those ladies in business, literally, you are the COO. You're the chief operating officer of the home. You're looking at the home and you're saying to yourself, I've got priorities. I've got planning. I need to develop systems and structures to create an environment where transformational love occurs. And you bring your best thinking and your best time management and your most creativity. And you say, here's each of my kids. Here's my husbands. Here's our tendencies. Here's the demands. Here's the pushes from the outside. And you are the chief operating officer and the manager and the home guru who develops the kind of systems that create an environment and in synergy where everybody's life touches God more deeply and touches one another more authentically. And that's your second priority. Notice here, the role is, it's an old-fashioned word, but it's powerful, is to be the mother. It's what a mother is. She's the teacher. She's the counselor, the consoler. She's the refuge for her children. And notice that a mother's goal is to give her children what they need, not necessarily what they want. This is hard for women because guess when you're a nurturer, nurture means I hate to say no. I hate it when they put their little lip out and go, why, mommy? You don't want your kids to have any pain. You don't want your kids to miss out on anything. And that will lead you down a path that will destroy your children. You need to give your kids what they need, not what they want. And what they need is to understand who God is. And God's goal is that they become winsome and loving and holy, not narcissistically happy, and get everything they want when they want it. I watch kids in these little carts with the mothers, you know, 2 and 3 year old. And I'm just thinking, I have now seen how a 2 year old drives in a grocery store. And the kid goes like this, gotta have that.
She just throws on the, you know.
And already we have a 2 year old who demands and sets the priorities for a home. I mean, I watch kids who determine where their families go out to eat. I watch kids who determine where the families spend the money. I watch kids who at 6 and 7 and 8 can determine the entire schedule for the whole week by their activities. Mother, lay down the law and say, we ain't going there here. You are the chief operating officer. You are the mother. Now, how do you get there? The practical outworkings first is model dependency on Christ. You know this, but I'll say it anyway. The fact is, your children in the end will not do what you tell them. You already knew that. And they will not become what you tell them to become. They will become what you are. Luke 6:40, the very words of Jesus said, every disciple or student, after they have been trained, will become just like his teacher. So you need to model dependency on Christ, because at the end of the day, it's not what you said, it's how you live. When my kids get up and they early in the morning go to the bathroom and they see my wife on her knees, they learn something. When they see how she walks with God and where her priorities are and why she says yes to this and no to that, they see dependency. And since modeling is your most important job and your most powerful behavior shaper, make your own spiritual development your number one priority. And a lot of you women, you'll feel guilty. You can take this to the bank, okay? You can tell this one to your husband. You can tell this one to your friends. At least one person, one Chip, said, it was okay for me to block out time and make time for me to spend time with God, to get in a Bible study with some other women to get refreshed, and to find a mentor for my life to put her arm around me and coach me about how to be the kind of woman and mother and single person that God wants me to be. And I'm going to put that in my schedule, on my to-grow list, before I even make a to-do list. And ladies, if you'll do that, you'll never be sad. You'll never be sad. But if you don't make your own spiritual development your number one priority, everything and everyone will grab all your time. And you will be depleted and giving out of what you don't have. And bad things happen then. Bad things happen to your emotions and you get depressed. Bad things happen to relationships and you start looking for fulfillment other ways. Bad things happen if you don't have something to give. And you have nothing to give unless you've been with Him. Second practical outworking in terms of mothering is pray for your children fervently and daily. Isn't it true that a mother's greatest concern and her greatest fears revolve around things she can't control? I mean, well, ladies, what's your biggest concern? Your kids are going to get hooked up with the wrong people, right? They're going to make a bad decision. They're going to do something stupid. They're going to get on drugs. Okay. Now, you teach them all you can. You have a loving environment. So how much control do you have of that moment, that night, when they have the opportunity and they can say yes to God or no to God? Tell me how much control in that moment you have. Zippo. You know where your power is? You pray. Prayer changes things. Matthew 6, seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened. Ask and you'll receive. The effective prayer, James 5, what? The effective prayer of a righteous man or a righteous woman accomplishes much. We had one of our kids go through 4 or 5 years of rebellion. I'm telling you, I think my wife just prayed his rebellious, stone-hearted heart out of that time. And we've had all kinds of situations, and I've watched her pray for a friend for our kids. We've had one of our kids that grew up, she came out of the womb negative. I mean, the glass was always not even half empty. And we prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed, and I've watched the blooming of a positive attitude. As God, see, the things that you can't change, only God can change. And your link in changing people's hearts and attitudes is intercessory prayer. Now, this sounds like a pretty spiritual approach to mothering so far, doesn't it? It's critical. It's critical. Third, pray for or create structures and scheduled times that make family a priority. There is a fact, and you know it and I know it. Speed kills relationships. That which is hoped for but not scheduled rarely happens. Moms must lay down the law in a hostile environment of competing time demands to make family a priority. Someone in the family has to say, stop! We're not doing that much. And the only way is, what do? You got to create structures, and you have to schedule times, and you say, this is the way it is. For example, the rudder in our family is dinner. 5:30 at the Ingram household is holy and sacred, and you better not miss it, and you better not be late. Now, there's rare occasions if you have a practice that goes here, or I have a real special meeting, but I'm telling you, 85, 90% of the time, 5:30 for all the years we've been married, there's a group of people that sit around a table, share a meal, talk about their day, ask questions, often have a little prayer time afterwards, goof off, tease one another, and what the psychologists and sociologists talk about happens. Socialization. Our values get transferred. Our hearts get connected. We hear about one another's day. Someone has to set a structure. We all just recently had a young gal over our house for dinner. And it was normal, and had some of my kids in from around town, and so we put the leaf on the table, and so there was about 8 or 9 of us, and we had a normal family dinner. When that happens, it goes 2-3 hours. And she got up, and she told one of my kids, "We never did this. This is the first family dinner I've ever been to," and she's like 23, 24. "How's your home doing, ladies? Tell you what, you take youth soccer on, head on. You tack ballet and your husband's work schedule." Now, it doesn't have to be at 5:30, it can be at 7. You can start out 2 or 3 days a week instead of 5 or 6 days a week. But somewhere, sometime, you have to create structures. Meals are one, bedtimes are another, vacations. Someone needs to say, "Hey, we're not going to go crazy," and everyone, "Oh, I can't make it here, I can't make it here, I can't make it here, I can't make it here." The COO says, "I got news for you. Everyone gets a chance to give their input, but this is when we're gone, and the whole family's gone, because family matters." "Well, can I bring 2 of my friends, 3 of my friends?" "No." "Yeah, no." "Ah, no." And then you go, and you build memories with your family that are priceless. Traditions are critical. I mean, birthdays at our house, my lands, they're huge. I mean, you are the most important. I mean, we celebrate like weekends, and then they bleed into the next week, and we're going to go bowling, and then we'll go out to dinner. I mean, it's nuts. And my wife plans it out strategically because she just believes that's how we do Christmas. Very important. What happens every Easter? Very important. That's what a mom does. You create systems, structure, and schedules that make family a priority. Fourth, teach them how to live. I mean, you shouldn't have to say this, but in our day, I mean, I watch your lives and you're pulled and there's so many demands. Teach them how to live. And what I mean by that is that the greatest teacher in every person's life, for better or for worse, is your mother. The greatest human bond that occurs, apart from marriage and most of your life, is your mother. You are the greatest teacher. So all I'm saying is be proactive and be creative. And think about, part of being a mom is I'm going to teach my kids. And you say, "Well, what do you teach them?" Well, I made a list. Teach them to read. Even before they go to school, even just the letters, but teach them to read. Teach them to pray. Teach them to cook. You know, get the little stool up and let them get involved in the action, boys and girls. Teach them to listen. Teach them to celebrate when something good happens and to enjoy it. Teach them to be generous. Teach them to do a craft. Teach him to talk and give a speech. I remember my wife helping one of my kids in speech class and, listening to it and giving him pointers. Teach him to resolve conflict. Teach him how to write. Teach him how to play an instrument. Teach him how to play a sport. You ready for this? Teach them how to relax and not feel guilty. And you're thinking, "I'll have to learn that one myself first." All I'm saying is, ladies, teach them. Take the headphones off in the car. Push the button so that video thing doesn't go. Play games in the car when you travel. Ask questions. Teach them to think. Ponder life. Be a teacher. You will profoundly affect your kids. And finally, make time to be available. The best things in life, you do know this, are not on your official calendar. I mean, the best. You can plan things, but the best things in life are not on your official calendar. Epiphanies, teachable moments, magical moments, heart-to-heart bonding, extemporaneous deep conversations, and life's greatest rewards can only happen in an environment of availability and margin. Now, ladies, listen very carefully. This has profound impact for some of you. Exhausted, harried, pushed, overextended, pressured, stressed out mothers simply cannot mother well. It ain't possible. It's impossible. It's impossible. You can't hold down this, be pulled this direction, be involved in that, have this coming here, pressure's over here, your husband wants this, those people want that, do this for yourself. It's impossible. You got to create margin in your life. And you have to be as radical in your schedule and in your lifestyle to create margin so you have time for you, something to give powerfully to your husband, and to be the kind of mother that creates this transformational environment of love. And for some of you, the implications of what I'm saying are staggering. You're on two incomes. You got a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. I mean, even the buses are telling us, brain development is greatest in the first 3 years of life. And you got this baby on the side of the bus. I did research, I knew that 25 years ago. So who's raising your 3-year-old? Who's raising your 3-year-old? Your 4-year-old, your 2-year-old. When your kids come home, who's there? Where do they go? We have 75% of women in the workforce between the ages of 20 and 50, and we now have a generation that were not raised by and large in our culture by their mothers. They were raised by other people. Now, do some people, of course, need daycare? Do some people in situations that absolutely need to have? Sure. Now, I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to believers in Jesus Christ who say, I want to do things God's way. I want to love my husband. I want to love my kids. I want to sit around a table when they're 25 and 28 and 30, and I want to see their lives turn out, and I want intimacy in my marriage that lasts for a long time. I'm telling you, if someone doesn't own the moral weight of that and invest energy and gift and grace to make that happen, it doesn't happen. And what we see all over America, Christian or non-Christian, it's not happening. For some people sitting in this room, I mean, you got big decisions. Does that mean I need to quit my job? I don't know. Talk to God about that. But what I do know is these first two priorities have to happen well, and then you can decide what other things you can or can't do before God. And that's your decision before Him. We have unconsciously just evolved into a two roles, two jobs, too much. And we've put women in an impossible place. And men, by the way, some of you are going to have to step up to the daggum plate and stick your chest out and say, whoa, if we're going to do this, I have no idea how we're going to make it. You might have to be as radical as sell your house and rent and live off the equity. Is he insane? Yes, maybe I am. You ask me 15 years from now whether you'd have kids that turn out right and an intact marriage, or do you want a little more equity in your house? Some of you might have to say, this is impossible, and live in Santa Cruz. Fine. What? Move out of Santa Cruz? Yeah. Change the paradigm. Would you rather live in Santa Cruz near the ocean, the beautiful mountains, and where you like to be? Or would you like to live 3 hours away from here and 15 years later say, wow, we got kids that love each other, we got a marriage that still works, we're not a statistic, and we live a sane life? I don't know what you need to do. Remember, there's a warning label on this sermon. I told you it's disturbing. I told you it would mess with your equilibrium emotionally. I don't know what God wants you to do, but I got to tell you, we're not going to tweak our families, 5 degrees and 10 degrees and see transformation occur. And half of all Christian couples are divorcing. And there's a huge percentage of people that aren't divorcing that they are not living under a roof of transformational love. It is chaos. It is pressure. It is harried. It is people just making do. There isn't intimacy. There's not intimacy in the marriage. There's not intimacy with kids. People don't talk. And we get a whole generation of kids growing up out of Christian homes that say, I don't think Christianity works. It didn't in mine. What I'm saying is we can't do that anymore. You be as radical as you need to be. Third thing a woman does, and I want to spend just a brief moment on this, is a woman's third priority is to train younger women in the art of becoming a godly wife and mother. If you are an older woman, all I want to say to you is you are commanded by God to impart your wisdom and direction for the next generation, and we are not doing it. The practical outworking is see the Santa Cruz Bible Church Women's Mentoring Program. Call the church this afternoon because there's not a receptionist. It's a great time to call. And when you get the recording, punch 447, okay? Call the church this afternoon. Younger ladies, older ladies, call the church this afternoon. Have we made this point? Call the church this afternoon. 429-1162. You'll get a recording. Punch 447. And the recording will say, this is the Titus II Women's Mentoring Program. If you'd like to be a mentoree or a mentorer, and you're saying, well, I don't have anything to offer. Did you raise any kids? You got something to offer. Have you read the Bible a little? You got something to offer. Do you love your husband? You got something to offer. Have you been through a divorce and came back through it? You got something to offer. You just bring who you are and put your arm around a younger woman who can hear, oh, that's how you balance your life? You mean every man goes through this in their 40s? Yeah. You mean every woman goes through this in their late 40s and 50s? Yeah. Oh. You mean there's answers? Yeah. You mean I'm still okay? Yeah. You mean there's actual verses that say that? Mm-hmm. Let me love you. Important questions to ponder. Should a woman work outside the home? I'd say when priorities 1 and 2 to your husband and family are taken care of well, you have peace in your heart, you're doing a great job, work as much or as little as you want to. It's between you and God. Well, you need to ask yourself, what stage of life are you in? What stage of life are your kids in? What are their needs? What's your energy, capacity? What does it do to you, not do to you? You need to figure all that out. But I will say very clearly that your husband and your children are first priority, where you can say, I'm creating a transformational environment of love, and I'm pleased. And having that done, I have this much time, or that much time, or I can volunteer, or I can do something part-time. You have got to figure that out with God. But let's not rationalize everything. Let's not tell ourselves that 10 minutes of deep, enriched time with our children is as good as 10 hours. It's not. Second, what about single moms? There's a sheet here that says Life and Family Resource Guide. And I want you to know, if you're a single mom, first of all, you do have the hardest job in the universe. And so if you are thinking of getting married again, as you look at this, we've got a team of people that will help you reconsidering marriage so you do it right. If you're struggling in your finances, we have some people that will help you financially. If you're struggling with some of your kids, there's some people here for parenting skills. If you think there's any possibility whatsoever, we have an amazing program with great results about reconciling God's way. If you're through a divorce and the wounds still have not been healed, we have a healing through divorce. If anything you've been through has to do with drugs or alcohol, codependency or sexual addictions, we have a celebrate recovery. You need a helper, a woman to help you, call the mentoring, 447. And if you're a single person here and a single mom, at 11 o'clock today, a group of single people meet up there upstairs in that room, and many of them have been through what you've been through, and they will love you and they will help you. Third question is, what if you can't live on one income? And what I would say is evaluate your lifestyle and ask yourself, what will these things bring you and how much you're willing to sacrifice, and what and how much do you believe your kids really matter? And then just know, whatever choice you make, you will live with the consequences for the rest of your life. I believe by faith it can happen. We lived on $900 a month. My wife stayed home with our kids while I worked and went through school. When I took the first church, I took a pay cut, believe it or not, and I only worked part-time. And so we had one car without air conditioning in Texas. And we lived in a neighborhood that I wouldn't wish on anybody in this room. You know what? If you determine that these values matter, you can figure out a way to make it financially. And you'll see God provide supernaturally. But boy, I'll tell you what. I remember a young guy came to Christ here named Art. And he was real naive. Didn't grow up around the Bible. I had a beautiful privilege of, after a service, they came up to my office and I had a chance to lead him to Christ. And, you know, he was one of those guys that just whatever he said he did. So we start reading the Bible. Starts reading the Bible. Started coming, he and his wife. And then a little bit later, probably about a year into it, he said, you know, he had a real good blue-collar job, made good money. But his wife had a white-collar job, and combined, they did really pretty well. And she had one child, and one was on the way. He said, you know, we're thinking she needs to be home. Well, all I'm learning in the Bible, I've never read this before, but isn't she supposed to be the mother? I said, well, yeah. He said, well, this is our income. That means it'll be this. I said, yeah. He says, how do you do that? I said, I don't know. God will have to show you. And they literally, they took that step of faith. They lived out of part of her retirement. And then they got to the very end. And I still remember he came one day and he said, it transformed their relationship. And then another year later, he said, you know, this has been a great church. And he gave me a big hug and big tear in his eye. He said, we're moving to Oregon. He said, we can live the same there on one salary, and it takes two here. And he said, something tells me that what we've experienced in this last year, 20 years from now, I'll be glad we're in Oregon with the kind of marriage and the kind of family. Is that radical? Now, I'm not hoping everyone signs up. Oh, everyone moved to Oregon. But ladies and men, these implications are heavy. There's a card that I'd like you to pull out and look at. Will you please? And the card just makes one singular statement about what it means to be a woman. What's a woman to do? Here's the box top God would give you. As a wife, I will assume primary responsibility for the establishment of a nurturing home environment for my husband and children. Along with that, he may give you all kinds of career opportunities and amazing things in your lifespan that will be wonderful and blessing in your life, multitudes of other gifts. But someone owns the primary responsibility for establishing this transformational center of love called the home. As you turn it over, there's some questions that I'd like you to ask yourself. What specific step would you need to take to move toward God's design to support, affirm, and empower your husband? 2, to create an environment for your children. And 3, to either get in or provide some mentoring. And with that said, I'd like you to lean back in your chair and think, okay? I mean, I understand what I've talked to. I understand how radical some of the applications. Remember, okay? I was not kidding. Warning, this could be a dangerous message. Or it could turn the tide and change the destiny of your family forever.
This concludes our teaching. Now, if you'd like to contact Living on the Edge, go to our website, livingontheedge.org. That's www.livingontheedge.org. And while you're there, check out the online community, where you'll have access to free resources to help you deepen your relationship with Jesus Christ. On behalf of Chip and the entire staff at Living on the Edge, thanks for listening.